to sharing this. Paul wrote in his opening letter, the one to the Galatians, in what is now labeled as the third chapter, the 11th statement. But because with the Torah, absolutely no one is vindicated. By the God, it becomes evidence because those who are correct, those who are righteous out of faith will live. He was citing Chabaouk, Habakkuk 2:4. He did exactly the same thing the Muslim guy did. He took a snippet of something God said, out of context, misrepresented it, and used something that says exactly the opposite to make it appear as if his point were valid. It is exactly what the Muslim guy did. God actually said, pay attention. He will be puffed up with false pride. He's speaking to Paul. In fact, he's announced that he's speaking to Paul. He named him by name. His soul is not right. It's not straightforward in him. So it's through trust. It's through reliance. By being firmly established and upheld by that which is dependable and truthful. That those who are vindicated shall live. God here is not only condemning Paul in this statement that Paul quoted to validate his point. But God is also saying that it's not by faith. That faith is not going to help you. That faith is useless. That faith is counterproductive. He says it's through trust and reliance. By being firmly established, by being upheld by that which is dependable and truthful, that the upright and vindicated shall live. Evidence against any doctrine, against any individual, doesn't get better than what we have just shared. Because, as you know, in the previous programs, I've shared what God actually had to say about this man. You know, let's repeat it before we move on. You know, in the very passage that Paul stole a snippet from to taunt him, said, upon my requirements, he's speaking of the requirements of the covenant, and my responsibilities, he's talking about the benefits of the covenant, I have decided that I will literally and continually stand. I will choose to always stand and present myself upon that which protects and fortifies. So then I will be on the lookout in order to see what he will say about me, observing how he will question me. But then how can I be expected to change my thinking or my response regarding my disapproving rebuke? Then Yahweh answered, approaching me, and he said, write this revelation down and expound upon it and reiterate it using letters on writing tablets so that by reciting this, he might run and go away. Still, indeed, this revelation from God is for the Moed appointed meeting times, which Yahusha came to honor those promises in 33 CE, where Paul was present in Jerusalem at the time. It provides a witness and speaks, pouring out evidence in the end, which entraps. The intended period of time required for this question to be resolved shall not prove it false. Turned out to be 666 years. Expect him in this regard, because indeed he will absolutely come, neither being delayed nor lingering. Pay attention, he will be puffed up with false pride. His soul, it's not right, it's not straightforward in him. So then, through trust and reliance, by being firmly established and upheld by that which is dependable and truthful, those who are vindicated shall live. For our read on, it is interesting that Babylon, which is the basis of that which is an opposition to God, Babylon is the kingdom endured for 66 years. The beast is associated with the number 666, exactly 666 years from the time that Yahweh uttered this prophetic declaration against Shaul, Paul, to the time he wrote his first letter, transpired. The beast that is described in Daniel 7 and 8 and 9 emerges from the Roman Empire. Paul was a Roman. He authored these books under a Roman name. It is a combination of things that we should not overlook, that we are told that if you want to identify this beast, know that his number is 666. And while that was written in a way that looks like it reads in the name of Allah, be aware that it was also written using a Greek system of communicating numbers using letters with a horizontal line over them. 666. This was declared and chiseled in stone. Inscribed in writing 666 years to the time that Paul would write his first letter, that of the Galatians. Moreover, Yahweh says, because the intoxicating and inebriating spirit of this man of deceptive infidelity and treacherous betrayal is a high-minded moral failure and is arrogant with meritless presumptions, he will not rest, nor find peace, nor live. Whoever is open to the broad path, the duplicitous and improper way associated with Paul. The broad path is through faith. Faith in the religion of Christianity is the broadest path there is on planet Earth today. God is saying that broad path, whoever is open to it, are not going to live. Exactly the opposite of what Paul said. And God identified the broad path with Paul, naming it, calling him arrogant, presumptuous, a high-minded failure, a man of deceptive infidelity, a man of treacherous betrayal, named Shaul. And that apart from what Paul was promoting, that you'll live through faith, God was saying, there is no life in faith. There is no life in the broad way of religion, which has become synonymous with faith, particularly the one associated with Paul. He and his soul are like the plague of death. And so those who are brought together by him, accepting him, will never be satisfied. Most every Gentile will gather together unto him, all of the people from different races and nations. They do not ask questions, any of them, about him. Terse references to the word they lift up as taunts to ridicule, along with elusive sayings and simplistic and contrived equivalencies and mocking interpretations, controlling through comparison, counterfeit and cliches, along with derisive words arrogantly conveyed. It's how Paul wrote his letters. It's how the religions emerge. They're counterfeits of the truth. Clichés, taunts, ridicules, elusive sayings, contrivances. There are hard and perplexing questions that need to be asked of him, and double dealings to be known regarding him. And so they should say, woe to the one who claims to be great so as to increase his offspring, acting like a rabbi, when neither apply to him. How long will they make pledges based upon his significance, becoming burdened by his testimony? God views Paul's letters as a burden. He views pledges of faith to Christianity as deadly. Evidence just doesn't get any more compelling than this, nor more relevant than this. God is expressly condemning the most influential man in human history. No one has had a greater influence on humanity than Shaul, called Paul, in the Christian New Testament. There are more followers of Paul than there are of any other human who has ever lived. And God has denounced him. He said, anyone who believes what he has to say, anyone who's part of his broad way, any Gentile that clings to him, anyone who makes a pledge based upon his significance, where he claimed to be the foremost of the of apostles, that they will find no peace, and that death will be the end of their lives. He has renounced the religion of Christianity and renounced all of Paul's claims, saying that he is exactly the opposite of what he claims to be. What could be more relevant? What could be more compelling? He even renounced him by name. Therefore, Yahweh revealed that a man named Shaul, coterminous with the time that he would fulfill his moed, appointed meeting times, with Yahusha's participation in the moed mikre of Pesach, Matzah, Bukurim, and Shavuah, in 33 CE, when Shaul was studying to become a rabbi in Jerusalem, would inappropriately attempt to convince people from different races, Goyim, Gentiles, that he was authorized by God to replace his existing standard with a new and different set of requirements. Further, as if he was reading Galatians, God told us that Shaul, Paul, would be arrogant, that he would be duplicitous, that he would use circular reasoning, that his resulting doctrine would be intoxicating, deceptive, treacherous, and overtly presumptuous. We were warned that this pseudo-rabbi's way would be improper, akin to a plague of death. And yet, according to God, Shaul's broad and therefore popular, accommodating path would become especially pervasive with Gentiles, because too few of them would actually question his elusive sayings, his derisive words, his comparisons, his counterfeits. They would all be ripe for the plucking, ready to taunt and ridicule the very God Paul claims to have had inspired him. Shaul, who Christians know as Paul, hung himself with his own words. He cited a passage in a prophet that's not well known, Habakkuk, to prove that he was right and that God's Torah was wholly and completely ineffective, when the passage that he quoted from in context actually says exactly the opposite. That it's Paul who's the liar. That it's Paul who's the plague of death. That it's Paul that should be rejected. He twisted the knot which became his noose. His statement is not only the antithesis of God's instructions, he exposed us to Yahweh's specific ridicule of him. Moreover, and apart from the prophecy, if Paul was right in disavowing Yahweh's standard, it would be equivalent to God saying, I will save those who contradict me, and I will justify those who negate and belittle the plan I have established. And yet Yahweh introduced his Habakkuk prophecy, affirming that he wasn't about to change, that he was going to continue to honor and stand by his requirements, five requirements to participate in the covenant, and that he was going to continue to stand up for and honor his responsibilities, which is to provide those who embrace the covenant with the benefits of the covenant. He's not about to change. That's what makes him dependable. Continuing to mislead by way of senseless and duplicitous prose, the King James Version renders Paul's next statement, and the law is not out of faith, but the man that doeth them shall live in them. I'm not sure what that means. deploying a different tactic, the New Living Translation, authored something which could only be considered appropriate in the context of religion. And this way of faith is very different from the way of the law, which says it is through obeying the law that a person has life. Wow. That would assume, of course, that there is a Hebrew word for obey. That would assume, of course, that Yahweh has a set of laws somewhere. That would assume, of course, that Torah means law. Should the translation team deployed at Tyndale House Publishers, Incorporated, have meant that the way of the Christian faith is very different from the way of the Torah, then they would be right. But can that way of faith be right is the multi-billion soul question. Can Paul's thesis, his faith, his religion, be very different from the way delineated by God in the Torah and still reconcile falling man into a relationship with that same God? Has God endorsed a revised plan which is counter to the one he originally authored? And if he did such a thing, wouldn't it make him untrustworthy and unreliable? I mean, that's a full stop if you're a Christian. Just what we covered this very moment. If God inspired a guy to say, my old plan won't work, and I'm renouncing my old plan, and I'm going to come up with a new plan that's entirely different, and now you should trust my new plan. That would be like a guy saying, you know, I'm going to build you an airplane, and the first time you get in it, it crashes. And the next time you get in the next airplane you build, it crashes. And you do it over and over again. And every time somebody gets in the airplane built by this particular manufacturer, it crashes. And then having that manufacturer says, oh, but why don't you get in the next one? I remade the next one. You should really trust me on this next one. And anybody that gets in that airplane and tries to fly would be a fool. And that's exactly what the basis of Christianity is. That's Paul's premise. Introspective of the fact that Yahweh has provided the answer, at least the battle lines have been drawn. According to the most popular translation, it is the Torah versus Christianity. So let the great Galatians debate begin. Are we to trust Yahweh's Torah or put our faith in Shaul, in Paulos, in Paul? Whose side are you going to be on? Are you going to trust God or this man? Because you can't have it both ways. But the Torah exists not out of faith or belief, but to the contrary. The one having done them will live with them. Now, that is a literal translation of what the Greek words say in Paul's Galatians 3:12. But the Torah exists not out of faith, but to the contrary. The one having done them will live with them. Now, recognizing that Paul didn't express his thought very well, principally because the Torah passage he cited didn't fit his conclusion. In context, we are led to believe that Shaul was suggesting that if an individual was to choose the Torah over faith, that they would have to live with that consequence. He is inferring that the only way to live with the Torah would be to do everything it requires. So since he tried to usurp God's credibility to prove his point, we must turn to the passage he referenced to ascertain whether or not Yahweh's Torah actually said what Paul was asserting. Opening Yahweh's Torah to Korah, called out Leviticus, we find God imparting guidance whereby we are advised to avoid the kinds of religious myths and practices which have been blended together to create the religion of Christianity. It reads, and this is Yahweh speaking to us now in first person. Speak, communicate with, use words to convey this, the bar, to the children of Yisrael, to the children who engage and endure with God, and say to them, I am Yahweh, your God. With regard to things which could be considered similar to the practices of the realm of the crucible of Egypt, where you dwelt, you should not engage in or act upon similar pursuits in the land of the Canaanite, which beneficially and as a result of the relationship I'm going to bring you to. There you should not act upon or engage in their decrees or customs, never walking in or following them. That would be Kara 18:3. With my means to exercise good judgment regarding the resolution of disputes, you should continuously engage and actually act. With my prescriptions for living, which were inscribed and cut you into the relationship, you should consistently examine and carefully consider for the purpose of approaching by walking in them. I am Yahweh, your God. This admonition against religion, politics, and societal customs was followed by the statement Paul sought to usurp to prove his point. It reads, and so you should choose of your own volition to actually and completely observe accordingly my inscribed prescriptions for living and also my means to resolve disputes, exercising good judgment. Where whoever, over time and as an ongoing practice, acts upon and engages with them, that individual, indeed, is actually and completely restored to life, and as a result of this desire and decision, will live forever through them. I am Yahweh. That's Kara called out, Leviticus 8:5. Now, God began this by saying, you know, all of the religious practices, all of the patterns of behaviors, the undertakings and the pursuits in the realm of the crucible of Egypt. Now, he's talking about crucible of Egypt speaks specifically of religious and political, economic and military oppression. And the practices of Egypt were to use the religion and integrate it within the government, the political mantra, whereby the Pharaoh was allegedly chosen by God and became the son of God, to impose his will on the people using the military, and that the economy was slave-based. That's the very thing that God says, I don't want you to engage in. I don't want you to have a religious society that integrates within that religion the political scheme and the military and the economic scheme. Those are the things that comprise the crucible of Egypt. And then you look at the Egyptian religion, where the sun was considered God. And look at all of these sun god trappings that made their way into Christianity, because to the Romans, who conceived the religion, who politicized the religion, who created the Roman Catholic and Eastern Orthodox Church, the sun was their god. And all of them, not only the Romans with Bacchus and the Greeks with Dionysus, but the Egyptians with Osiris, not only had the son of the sun, therefore the son of God, who is identical to in behavior and nature and myth and holidays to the Christian Jesus dying and being resurrected on exactly the same days, Easter Sunday and the winter solstice, that the exact nature of the Egyptian religion became manifest in Christianity. Virtually every aspect of it. They even had a Queen of Heaven and Mother of God, just as does Christianity. All of it was embraced in Christianity, and God is here saying, don't do that. Don't follow those customs. Don't follow those practices. Don't act upon them. Don't engage in them. When you move into the promised land, which he's describing as the land here of Canaanite. He says, because I'm offering you this place, and there I don't want you to act the way that the Egyptians acted. And at the time, the Egyptians were the most religious, most politicized, most militant, and economically jaundiced place on earth. I said, don't be that way. He says, instead, with my means to exercise good judgment regarding the resolution of disputes, the mishpat, those things you should engage in and act upon. There's seven of them. These are the very basis of enabling the benefits of the covenant. You know, the first four of them facilitate all four or all five of the covenant's benefits. Yahweh's responsibilities to make us immortal, to make us perfect, to adopt us into his family, to enrich us and to empower us. They are the means that Yahweh uses to save the children who have engaged in his covenant, which is why this is being addressed to the children of Yisrael, to children who to act in such a way that they engage and endure with God. And he says, then with my prescriptions for living, chukah, that which I have inscribed in writing, that cuts you into the relationship, you should consistently examine and carefully consider. Pay attention to them. Use your eyes. See, read what I have written for the purpose of approaching, by walking in them. I am Yahweh, your God. I mean, this is the antithesis of Pauline doctrine. With my means to exercise good judgment regarding the resolution of disputes, you should consistently engage. With my prescriptions for living that I've inscribed in writing, you should consistently examine and carefully consider them for the purpose of approaching. Walking in them. Because I am Yahweh, your God. And so you should choose of your own volition to actually and completely observe Shamar. Shamar means use your eyes to focus on the written text so that you can read it and that you consider and contemplate what you have read. So you should choose of your own volition. It was written in the call perfect consecutive. So literally read perfect, the totality of consecutive of your own choice. Accordingly, my chukah, these inscribed prescriptions that cut you into the relationship. And also my mitzvot, my means to resolve disputes so that you can exercise good judgment. Whoever over time and as an ongoing process acts upon and engages with them, that individual indeed is actually and completely restored to life as a result of this desire and decision, living forever through them. I am Yahweh, your God. There is no way of mistaking this. God is saying that the misfot, the means that he has delineated for us to exercise good judgment regarding the means to resolve disputes, which is the seven moed mikre, his invitations to meet with God and to become perfect, to become immortal, to become adopted, to become enriched and empowered, thereby vindicating his children, making us righteous and upright. that it's by closely examining, carefully considering, and acting upon them in conjunction with that which God has inscribed in writing that cuts us into this relationship. It's through that process that we are restored to life and that we live. The Misfat and the Chukah can only be found in one place, Yahweh's Torah. And so it's by reading Yahweh's Torah and examining it and then acting upon these two aspects of it, the means to resolve disputes and the inscriptions that cut us into the relationship that we live. That is Yahweh's means of restoring us to life. It is Yahweh's means for us to live with Him. Once again, Paul, by misquoting God and taking his statement out of context, conveyed the opposite of what's true. Yahweh, it just happens to be God, is telling all who would listen. And by the way, he's speaking in first person here. So this is definitely Yahweh versus Paul. God is speaking in first person. No one's quoting him here. He's telling all who are willing to listen to him that if a person wants to live, if they want to be restored to life, they should pay attention to what he has to say and act upon the offer that he has made in his Torah. He is speaking in the Torah. These words are part of the Torah. He's telling us that if you want to live, you ought to listen to what he has to say in his Torah. This citation is literally in the heart of the Torah. This citation is from Leviticus, Kara called out 18:5. It is in the Torah that Yahweh will present, introducing to us this seven-step path from our corrupt religious world to his home. It is in this midst of this Torah that Yahweh delineates the specific means that he has conceived and that he has subsequently honored to enable us to walk to him, to be with him. This statement is in the heart of the Torah, with God speaking to us in first person. Yahweh's words are contained in the very book that Paul was assailing. I mean, think about how stupid that is. That God is here saying that my words, as they're being articulated here in the Torah, are the means to your salvation, to life, to restoration. And yet, Paul would cite those words out of context, misrepresent them, to convey exactly the opposite, that Yahweh's words in the Torah can't save. And that billions of people would believe him. I mean, that's the amazing part of this whole thing. That billions of people would believe that God's words, as they are articulated in the Torah, where he says, this is the thing I want you to pay attention to, because this is how you are saved. This is how your life is restored. That the very text in which Yahweh is creating, that Yahweh is articulating, that these words are retained in, where God is promising to restore those who pay attention to what he has to say and act upon it, that they're incapable of saving. That God was therefore lying. And yet, he's quoting this God lying to prove the validity of his alternative, while at the same time claiming to be inspired by that very same God. I mean, it's the most preposterous, ludicrous, irrational, utterly stupid thing that's ever been popularized. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of stupid stuff. We talked about Scientology the other day of flying over the volcano and dropping in souls with an extraterrestrial spaceship. I mean, that's pretty stupid. But how many Scientologists really are there that have succumbed to that stupidity? I mean, Mormonism is really stupid, but there aren't that many Mormons. This is the most popular religion in the world. There are 2.5 million people who have been beguiled by this utter insanity. I mean, the very basis of Pauline doctrine is preposterous for the reasons we have just discussed. It's why you cannot be an informed and rational Christian. It's impossible, folks. You either don't know what Yahweh articulated in his Torah, or you can't recognize that when God said the opposite of what Paul said, there is no chance that Paul is telling the truth when he claims to speak for that God. One of the two. You're either irrational or you're ignorant, or you're not a Christian. You can't be an informed and rational Christian. Not based upon this. It's cut and dry. It's obvious. Paul has once again deliberately truncated, abbreviated, and misappropriated a passage which is inconsistent with his own message, perhaps hoping that by the mere presence of some common words, that that would be sufficient to convince his audience that God supports his position. Ignorant and irrational defines faith.